What is the legacy of Kane Williamson, the cricketer?
Hell of a player. Really boring in T20s. Has an orange cap, and he could quite justifiably go, well, never mind. Was part of one of the worst trading decisions in franchise cricket history, sacking off Rashid Khan because they wouldn't let him be captain and letting him go to a better performing franchise than them to make Kane Williamson captain in a format that he's not great at. But the test match guy and the ODI guy, I think, is a great player. And I think he's also done a lot for cricket by the way he handles himself and projects that image onto his team of that there is a place in life. You and I probably aren't the best advocates for it, Jared, of just being a good bloke, right? Uh-huh. And it's nice to see,
isn't
it?
I've heard of it as a concept.
But it is nice to see sometimes that the good guys can do it, right? And a lot of the, it's a shame that they never quite got over the line in the various finals, other than the England one, obviously. But Kane Williamson has been a really good servant to cricket, I would say, as far as his legacy goes. Brilliant test match player, brilliant ODI player, capable at averaging a lot in T20s, is my summary.
I think he's an obvious great, and he's one of the best players New Zealand has ever had. But it feels like he's a great but.
Yeah. Because the test career is very, very amusing, to be honest. Like, because England, South Africa, Australia, India, I think almost everywhere he has.
I think he's made runs against South Africa at home, and yes, he hasn't played much against them away. Mm. So I think he can move the South Africa one apart. Mm. But against England, India, and Australia, he's...
But even with Australia, that would be the argument then, because he's just played two series.
Yeah, but he hasn't made runs against Australia at home either.
But at least he had a good away series in Australia, right? In 2014.
Good. Yeah.
Give me some numbers.
He scored 100 in Perth.
He's a fascinating player. So in Australia, he's played 7 test matches and he averages 42. It's not particularly a bad record, but against Australia altogether, he averages 37, right? Against England altogether, he averages 42. And against India altogether, he averages 38, right? So South Africa's the only one where he has a plus average of 62. Some of that is bashing South Africa's D or whatever it was. Yeah. A while back.
And he scored like 304 innings, I would say.
Yep.
What's his test average?
His test average is ridiculous. It's 54, right?
54, no? It was 57.
I think he's great.
Yeah, 54. I think he's definitely great, but it's not, his career is not as straightforward as his numbers make it look. So you said he was a great one-day player. He doesn't fit in every team, does he? I don't think he would have played in the great England teams.
Interesting.
And
I think they could have fit him in.
With a strike rate of 81?
But when you have Root, you probably don't need to fit him in who is English. These are difficult questions. But
it's not that he's not a great ODI player.
Yeah.
But he's not a automatic, like you put Viv Richards in every
of course
ODI side ever,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's because of his flamboyance.
No, not flamboyance, because he fits, there's no team that Viv Richards can't fit in.
47 average and 90 plus strike rate.
Yeah.
It's like good for any era.
Right? What's his one-day number?
His one-day number is really good.
81 strike rate, 81.
Yeah, 44 average, I think.
48, 49 average, I guess. You're talking about Kane Williamson, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But there are, to counter that argument that you just had, Jared, there are some pitches that Kane Williamson would be the first name on the team sheet.
Exactly.
Right?
That's why I think he's not automatic, but he's still incredible.
If your horse is for courses and the going is tough, you want Kane Williamson, don't you? Yeah. Because he's the guy that can play on the difficult pitch because his technique's so good. He's the guy that can play when the clouds have come down and everyone else is struggling. So I would always have one of those in my squad.
If you look at the great ODI sides,
yeah,
right? You could argue that Ponting could do that, right? You could argue that Kohli could do that, right? You could argue that Root could do that. You could argue that, you know, AB could do that. You could argue that Amla could do that. I'm just saying, that's what I mean. His career is just fascinating because the raw numbers are so good, and yet there's always a caveat. And then you get to T20 cricket, where I still think he could have been a much better T20 cricketer than he was. The average is 31 with a strike rate of 123, right? And some of those...
But don't you think his technique restricted him a little bit more than anything else in T20 cricket?
I think when he wanted to score 2 runs a ball, he did.
Yes, we saw the stats the other day. Like, his long over batting is insane. He was scoring almost a 200 strike rate. But it comes down to that level where he would know that there's a guy on the other end who would be a better hitter. So maybe why not just give him strike by taking a single? So that's what generally he has done with his T20 career, I would say.
Yeah, but he's done that sometimes with a strike rate in the power play of under run a ball. Right? So, I mean, he's really pulling back.
He was a man that was quite easy to find out in T20 when they just brought third man up, because he scored. Kalish used to do it constantly, KKR days, when he would walk off the field 65 not out and be really happy with himself in a T20 innings. He's just that guy down to third man for the one. And Kane Williamson does it all the time at the start of his T20 innings. And then teams went, actually, let's just bring this man up here. And he goes, no run instead of the definite single, no run again. And then he plays the shot that he's not comfortable with. And out he goes. That was happening towards the end of his T20 proper career. Maybe he still goes in T20s, but he's not going to play in the IPL again, you wouldn't have thought.
But he's a very different player. Like, to be honest, like in 2020, when India toured New Zealand, in one of the matches, like, Bumrah was nailing the T20 eyes by that time. I think India had 1-3-0. In 4 T20i, nobody was having a clue how to play Bumrah.
And he's a genius.
Williamson was just hitting him for fun.
Yeah.
He almost won them the match. And then the same thing happened in 2021 World Cup Finals also. Out of nowhere, he just kind of switched on a very different level altogether.
This goes back to Rob's point of, especially towards the end of World Cups, pitches get a little bit weirder, right? You know, they've been used a bit. Tournament gets a bit tired. He's the best white ball player I've ever seen at reading a pitch. Just going, this pitch is 242 par. Hmm. And everyone else being like, no, what are you talking about? He's like, that's 242. And he'll be like one run in front. Like, he's a genius at that. But the problem is that on wickets where it's harder to work out what the par is, he's still got the restrictors on.
Yes.
And he has that. That's why he's not as automatic to be playing in any side as anyone else. So this is why I find him fascinating, because he is such a obviously great player with these weird little caveats.
Yeah, it's because...
Would you call him the greatest New Zealand player to ever play?
I have travelled the cricketing world, and so I've collected two things: the phone numbers of random taxi drivers and overseas SIM cards. Rideshare apps have fixed the first part, and Sally is doing the second. Now, all you need is their eSIM on whatever plan works for you. You activate it, and you can use it anywhere in the cricketing world. It helps you save money. It is a global solution to a global problem. Stop fiddling with tiny sims and get the one that does it all. Go to Sally.com Good Areas and use the code Good Areas to get an exclusive 15% off your first purchase. Fly free with Sally.
I had him as slightly ahead of Martin Crowe as the greatest batter.
Wow.
In Test cricket. And I think you guys know how I feel about Martin Crowe.
Yeah.
No. I think Martin Crowe probably, if Martin Crowe's knees hadn't gone, and we got a couple of years of Martin Crowe, 32 to 35. Maybe Kane might not have gone past him. And Martin Crowe played in a much tougher era where the averages were a lot lower.
With reverse swing and everything.
Yeah, and was the guy who conquered reverse swing, right?
Exactly.
But I think you have Kane ahead of him. They don't really have that many great batters, right? Obviously, Kane's, as great as he is, he's a long way behind Hadley as a cricketer, right? And there's a gap between Crowe and Williamson and Hadley. But... yeah, there really isn't that many other guys. There's a guy called Glenn Turner who played in the 70s who basically gave up cricket playing for New Zealand because they didn't pay him. Mm. Went off and dominated county cricket and did all these things. He was great, but they didn't have a lot of those players. So Kane's definitely that. Like, we'd have him, you know, considerably ahead of, I think, again, ahead of Ross Taylor.
Yeah.
Ahead of guys like Fleming.
Yeah.
Right? You know, guys like Mark Richardson had these, and, you know, John Wright. Really good careers, but nothing like that. So he's definitely at the head of that when it comes to New Zealand.
Yeah, I think so.
But even though he might end up with the highest batting average of the Fab Four, I'm not sure he's the best. I'm not sure he's not the fourth best batter still.
Yeah.
I would say there are a few limitations there. Mm. I think the technique brings about a few limitations. I'm not saying there's no effectiveness with that, with the technique. There is, he's found a workaround and he's been super effective with it. I also think that the world loves a lot more flamboyance than the good boy image.
Mm.
And he is the quintessential great guy, right? Mm. Kane's the quintessential great guy. He's a great conversationist. You'll sit around and talk to him. He's very soft-spoken, but he's, you know, very self-assured. All things right about him as a cricketer, as a batter. And more traditional in nature, even for modern cricket. Quite traditional.
Yeah.
So I think the world in general like outliers a lot more.
I will say this.
And that's why we're even having this conversation, right? And I think
I think he is an outlier because he's almost, because he's a bit confusing, but you're right. He's a nice guy who is lovely to meet and everything. The press conference he did at the end of the 2019 World Cup, you know, that was a huge day for anyone in cricket. I remember going around being like, what? He can't just be Kane Williamson today.
Mm. Yeah.
And he was just Kane Williamson again, right? And it was almost like the press conferences I'd done with MS Dhoni where I was like, surely this is the day that you switch into another. And he was like, no, I'm Kane Williamson. And I love the fact that the, you know, New Zealand fans wear the captain's cap and everything. Like he's left a huge impact on New Zealand cricket by being himself.
Yes.
Yeah. But
and he's also led them in their golden era, I would say.
And that's another huge mark, right? Yes. I mean, a lot of
why
that.
Why are you upset?
Hmm?
You've been like this the whole time.
Do you hate Kane Williamson?
No, I don't.
There's the headline. No, I think the golden era stuff's really important too. But a lot of that was built on the back of Mike Hessen and Brendan McCullum's work.
Hmm.
Right? A lot of that was built on the fact that they professionalised their cricket.
Hmm.
So I don't know if you're like this. The year that Ross Taylor started in professional cricket was the first year that New Zealand cricket was professional.
Hmm.
So that year, Ross Taylor didn't make his debut at the start of the year because the players went on strike, which you can't technically do if you're not being paid, but they stopped playing first-class cricket because they're like, why would we play if we're not going to get paid? So New Zealand cricket was so far behind any other cricket culture in the world, really, because of this amateur stuff.
And now they're the best.
And then they had this incredible wave that they all rode, right? You know, I mean, you know, lots of people.
It leads to such an interesting conversation, but go on. I don't want to digress.
Hey?
It leads to such an interesting conversation.
Please go.
No. We'll just go off topic and let's stay on Kane.
Well, what's fascinating about Kane Williamson is I think he's a combination of old New Zealand thinking, which is we don't have all the best players. We don't have all the resources, so we have to be smarter than everyone else, right? But also, he's very traditional, right? So you compare him to Crowe and Coney, Walter Hadley. They were all out of... Walter Hadley, Richard Hadley's dad, went to England in 1948 and said, we're not taking any bowlers. They're not going to beat us in a test match. We're going to draw every single test match and they're going to look like idiots. We're not going to take...
I absolutely love that.
Yeah, he took three bowlers.
I've got the programs.
Yeah, have a look, read through it. It's incredible. Yeah. Some games they had like 2.5 bowlers in their lineup, and he went, doesn't matter, we'll make 400 every innings. We'll end up drawing the series. It'll be absolutely fine. And he was right. And they did it.
They drew it.
They drew all the tests.
No.
So it sounds like India versus England, awesome. No?
Hey,
India also did the same thing.
Yeah. Right, but that's a New Zealand thing, right? They do think about cricket in a way that, you know, and they have to. And that amateur spirit helped them. But now they're matching that with professionalism, and Kane's kind of like
the bridge.
Yeah. So I kind of like that.
Mm.
And his bowling adds up to that?
He should never have been allowed to bowl in international cricket. His action was never legal.
Yeah,
was it? I can't remember a single time I watched him bowl and thought he was bowling legally. Do you ever face Kane?
No.
His action looks a little dodgy.
What do you think of his action, Robbie?
I've not seen him bowl.
Robbie, what do you think of his action?
I've not seen him bowl.
Why does he lie on camera so much?
Oh my God, I genuinely haven't seen him bowl.
You might have bowled to him. It's a possibility. Because in 2018, maybe?
I think one of these two would know if he'd bowled.
second best cricketer New Zealand's ever had is the legacy. We talked about this a lot. You missed some of the podcasts we did the other day. We'll finish with this. In 25 years' time, how do we discuss Kane Williamson?
I think his legacy can be summed up in the face he pulled when the ball hit Stokes's bat when he was diving in, because it's just been, if you in the next universe along, he has spearheaded Australia to multiple white ball trophies. Correct.
That's how good he was. He inspired.
No, I said the next universe along where he plays for Australia. No, bloody hell, Rob. he's so close, right? And they have been quite big second favourites to win those finals in each of them. Couldn't have been closer against England. McCullum forgot to watch the ball against Australia. Had, you know, the ball not hit Stokes, it's about how Bolt took that catch. Had, you know, if my auntie had wheels, she'd be a bike and all that. But
he got them the mace, though, didn't he?
He did get them the mace.
So if the World Test Championship keeps being important,
yeah,
that helps his legacy in 25 years. That's the thing.
So,
right?
But I do think his legacy is that stoic face of, we've done our absolute best,
yeah,
but we didn't quite get over the line. And I think that sort of describes him as a cricketer, doesn't it? He did his absolute best. He's really, really good, but he's not quite as good as the best five.
I wrote a piece in 2015 when they lost
best
that
five.
Film. He's not in that conversation. He's not quite as good as the best of his era across the formats. Not quite.
Yeah. I wrote a piece in 2015 and when they lost the final called The Greatest Almost.
I don't like these conversations, honestly, because...
No, you don't get to say that, because the other day I said we did two episodes like this, and you said, what, you don't think I could do them? And then you come in for one, and
what
then you
nonsense.
Vote about
when
it.
What nonsense? When did this happen?
I told you we did something on, was it Coley's Legacy and Stokes's Legacy?
Yes. Oh, we did. Like,
no. I wanted to be on those shows.
Yes.
No,
yes.
Not at all.
You're the worst person I've ever met. That's the end of the show. Turn off the cameras.
Thank you for listening to this podcast on the Combox Network. There is an ad-free version of this you can find by supporting us on Patreon at Good Areas Podcast. You can also access our Discord channel there. Please like, subscribe, and rate this show. Every one of these helps us. If there was a guest on a show, you can find their links in the show notes. Huge thanks to Ruckshit, Ishit, and everyone else who helps us get our content out there. If you want to know more about us, head to combox.tv.
If you make a lot of content like me, oh, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.